You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with the cast of Aquila's Escape, actors Saul Williams, Tamala Mpuana, and Donisha Prendergast. Aquila's Escape tells the story of an urban child soldier, Aquila Brown, after he captures a 15-year-old Jamaican boy in the aftermath of an armed robbery. Over one grueling night, Aquila confronts a cycle of generational violence that he thought he had escaped. In this one-on-one, we get to speak to the cast about speaking to our younger selves, what they think it takes to break free from the cycle of poverty, speaking to our past selves, and the nature of toxic masculinity in this culture. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome. Well, honestly, thank you, all of you, for chatting with me. I really appreciate it. This is a real privilege. It's a great film, and I'm not just saying that because we're chatting. I really think it's brilliant, and it's just an incredible story. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I was wondering, what is it? I mean, and this, I guess, for all of you, but what attracted you to the script? What was it that you connected with this story?
What attracted me to this story was the very prominent and very vivid message that it paints, that it illustrates through the film, through its writing. And the connection between the name of the film and how that corresponds to the events that transpire in the film, and how it chooses to convey that message with, you know, two characters being played by a single artist, a single actor, you know, how its connection and its understanding towards the, you know, generational violence, and that the theme that takes place within the film, that really attracted me to it. Talking about it with Charles, really gave me some very strong insight and, kind of gave me an opportunity to reflect on how some of the things that this film hammers on, are present within both my day-to-day life and, you know, on a global scale, for Black lives and for, you know, individuals like that can identify with its message and with the narrative. So it was really just how many things that it connects to and how many different ways that it relates to very socially pressing and relevant topics. How it kind of like, you know, incepts a conversation that's very overdue and that's been neglected for quite some time, unjustly, of course. So, you know, that became really intriguing, a very intriguing aspect of the film to me, and, something that really inspired me to, kind of explore this world, explore this, you know, regime.
Yeah. Donisha, Saul, what was it that drew you to Aquila's Escape?
The opportunity to play a Jamaican character using my authentic voice, I think, was a big selling point for me. There are no roles for Jamaican actresses in Canada. Whenever we do see a Jamaican character on screen, she's often played by an American or someone else trying to imitate the accent. And so for me, I thought, why not take a chance? In addition to the fact that it's a phenomenal script, and the opportunity to work with some amazingly talented cast members and Charles Officer, It would have been a silly decision not to embrace this opportunity to step into something new, and a story that matters, a story that gives insight into conversations that are often looked at through a very minimal lens. Do something important.
Mm. And for me, I would say that, you know, as someone that has a working relationship with Charles over the years, I've always appreciated his sensibility as a thinker, as an artist, as a writer with this script, which he's never shied from these questions that continue to, you know, be of relevance and importance, not only to our community, but to, you know, the role of humanity itself. And so, you know, for him, it's not a venture into a film that's about, you know, an important topic. All of his films have always had that sensibility. And for this one in particular, I think the keenness of his awareness of playing with the idea of a crime noir, you know, genre, and seeing that a story like this could fit into a genre like that and still maintain his sensitivity to the topic while also, you know, entertaining and playing with that idea of genre, I think is a very subtle nod to, you know, his skill as a director and as a thinker. And so I was very appreciative of the script when I read it, immediately told him, yeah, I'm in. And then, like Donisha said, then after that, you know, I think that the set and which was a safe space for us, which, you know, it carried through. His Charles's sensitivity carried through onto the set and onto the screen. Mm-hmm. So overall, it's just been a beautiful process. And the way, as Tamela said, you know, the way that it corresponds with the times is really synergistic. And it's important to note that, you know, he didn't write this thing, you know, just yesterday, knowing the sort of, you know, opportunity that might be given to someone talking about this thing now because of what we're talking about, you know, in global discussions regarding criminal justice and what have you and Black lives. But he wrote it, you know, over the course of 10 years where it wasn't always popular to talk about these things. And he hasn't always found it easy to find support to tell this story on the big screen. And so it's amazing that it was all able to come together.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's amazing that you say that, because that's not something that most people think about, is the timing of it. And, you know, this is not something that just popped up in June where I sort of said, hey, I should write this story. You know, this has been a long process and the timing of it is just incredible. One of the many aspects of this film is about trying to break free of that cycle of poverty and violence. And I was wondering what any of you feel it actually takes to break free from that cycle. What is necessary for someone like Akila, or in the case of Shepherd, for Shepherd to be able to break free moving forward?
I mean, in the story, it's this kind of theatrical and intervention of Akilah's character, that me and Saul share, that kind of leads to that impasse or that juncture where now we start to see this opportunity provided that can, you know, create the room for a chance to break this cycle. That, you know, Akila experienced and that he's now seeing reoccur with this boy that he encounters in the film. But I think to, you know, kind of address that question, the broader answer would be, you know, it can be something as small as one person or as large as an entire institution in order to, you know, resolve that dilemma that, issue takes, you know, the attention, and it takes awareness. It takes, you know, the understanding and, you know, kind of expulsion of ignorance. So, you know, to properly, you know, correct something like that on that scale with such magnitude, I think it would involve, you know, the correction of entire nations, you know, in order for us to really enact change. And, you know, it's not something as simple as a year or 2 years. It's lifetimes of, you know, us having that mindset in order for there to see a, you know, a noticeable response to an issue like that. So, how it's kind of gone about here is just kind of in the micro scale where, you know, Akilah's character is, you know, to the best of his ability, being conscious of all the things that can come out of a person in these circumstances, you know, to the best of his ability, trying to, you know, resolve and kind of eliminate that, remove that person from that situation. And of course, it turns out the way it does. I'm not sure if we're talking to an audience that's already seen the film or the one that hasn't, but, you know, it's you know, in this capacity, it's, you know, one person taking it upon themselves, knowing that, you know, it might be at the complete expense of their survival. And to some extent, you know, everybody has to think like that, because there is, you know, there's something very great at stake. So, yeah.
I think this film is a poetic dissection of a gangster story, looking at a kind of political violence that has been inherited over generations. Coming from Jamaica and knowing political violence intimately, it is not an easy question as to what the solution is. You know, in Jamaica, we don't have tribes, but I once heard someone say that our political parties are like tribes. Once you're born into a family, you have, you know, immediately become a part of this tribe that identifies you. And it's vicious. It's vicious when your entire identity is rooted in something that you have no control over. To try and answer the question, you know, I once heard Lauryn Hill say in one of her performances, we often think that the answer is retreat, but it's actually confrontation. And I have to agree. We have to be brave enough to become something for which we have never been, especially when it comes on to things like this that causes generational trauma. It doesn't help that we live in a world right now where we have a man like Donald Trump who's running one of the biggest powerhouses in the world. But it comes down to our individual efforts that then become collective efforts that then become a collective consciousness that hopefully one day will become a culture. You know, so everyone has a role to play, but it first starts with informing oneself about things that we don't know anything about. You know, we, instead of being judgmental, we need to find spaces to be more compassionate and more intentional in our exploration of each other and ourselves.
Exactly. You know, it's, you know, when we talk about that trauma, as Denisha stated, it's like we also have to be clear on the fact in a confrontational sense that trauma that is being, you know, explored in this film, you know, is handed down. It's part of the trickle-down effect of white male, heteronormative, patriarchal, capitalistic systems that have done more to destroy our communities than build them. And we, you know, find ways of building a sort of dual power so that we, you know, we make demands of the government, but we also make demands of ourselves and of our communities, of ways that we choose to interact and look out for each other beyond what we can expect from the so-called powers that be. When you talk about cycles of poverty, even I think of the intellectual poverty that comes and surrounds those who are privileged enough to not know, you know, their true history, you know, in society, on this planet or what have you. You know, like Tamala's family, for example, forgive me, Tamala, but it comes from South Africa, for example. And I doubt very seriously that he's had the privilege of his life to not be reminded of the fact of what, you know, of the history of the apartheid regime and the sort of privilege that he's allowed to have as a result of, you know, how he's living now and what Janisha had to say about it, you know, was escaping, not even escaping, but being intimately aware of political violence. And as an African-American, I as well am extremely aware of, you know, what the system has imposed and the way in which, you know, our existence is oftentimes a response to that. I mean, we know, for example, that gang culture in the US is so heavily connected to the infiltration of our political organizations by the CIA and the FBI. And it's no different in Jamaica, the role that the CIA has played in those political parties, you know, and what have you. And so there is an intellectual poverty surrounding these topics, because there is a great deal of denial and a great deal to, you know, a great wish to see entertainment only reflect one narrative of this sort of like white savior or hero or what have you, without telling true stories, even in school. You know, like half the histories that we pride ourselves on are histories that have been handed down from our parents and grandparents, but we weren't necessarily taught all of these things in the schoolhouses, mm-hmm. You know. But we've had to inform ourselves. We've had to be informed because of the fact we know what happens when we walk out of our houses and into our cars and get stopped by police, for example. So we have to know something beyond what our teachers tell us, but what our parents and what have you tell us about what to look out for, right? Mm. And the history of that. And so what's beautiful about this film is that Charles, who also shares, you know, in that history and in that story, whose family is also from Jamaica, who has also, you know, migrated to New York, who also migrated from New York to Toronto. He shares in that history and in that knowledge, and is doing a great gift to the public and imparting, you know, some of the gems of what, you know, he's been able to observe and think about as a human being and as an artist. And it's one of the great, I would say, powers of this film.
Absolutely. And actually, it's funny, Saul, one of the questions I had, maybe you've answered it, but so much of the story, I just love how it interacts between past and present. And I was wondering what you think the elder Akilah would want to say to his younger self had he had the opportunity to speak into his own life.
Well, in many ways, I think the film is setting us up for that specific question that you're asking. Mm-hmm. And that when he encounters Shepherd and flashes back on his youth, he's hoping to impart to Shepherd what, you know, he wished someone had said to him. And his mother and even his father, they said interesting things to him, but he was able to process that in his own way through time. Mm. And through the gift of migration also, was able to reinvent himself and to begin the process of thinking differently and approaching, you know, his life differently. And I think that that's what he's in the process of trying to impart to Shepherd. And I don't think enough is said about, you know, what triggers his, you know, these movements in Akilah's life, without giving much away. But I think he's very moved by the experience of his mother, you know. And I think that also is what raises his sensitivity and sensibilities as he's communicating and beginning to communicate with Dunisha's character, Faye, is that he also understands, you know, the ramifications of this, you know, very masochistic, patriarchal, violent, you know, reality that has been handed down. He knows the ramifications that it has, you know, in a broader sense, and he's at least attempting to be of service. which is you know, sometimes the most that we can ask of ourselves is to be of service, to not only be able to reflect on and see what needs to be done differently, but to act and be that change and to confront it, as Dunisha stated.
I have to say, Tamela, you are incredible in this and just remarkable. I was wondering how you managed to bring these two characters to life in such different ways. How did you prepare for that? It is just incredible.
Well, I mean, you have Charles on set, you know, who did work on the script to a very, very high degree. So he has a very distinct image. And I'd say that this is also in part to his style, where, you know, he does give you a lot of creative freedom when you're there. He does give you, you know, a chance to really take it up to your interpretation of how things work. But, you know, when you read the script, it's very congruent with, you know, what he tells you and what he kind of would have orchestrated in part of the various scenes that you're filming. So, you know, it's a lot of him saying, or it's a lot of me consulting him and saying, okay, well, like, I want to know what the energy from this is, you know, what the motive behind this is. Not to say that, you know, the script doesn't help me out a lot, you know, that I don't get a lot of, you know, pitches from the script. It's very self-explanatory, but in addition to the fact that, you know, Charles has such a deep and personal connection with the material. So, you know, to ask him, okay, well, this, and this, he's able to kind of break it down to me in a way that's, you know, very, very congruent with the energy, with the setting, and with the message. So, you know, it was a lot of me consulting with him, but then it's a lot in part to the environment that I was in that allowed me to have so much focus, you know, being alongside Saul and Dunisha, who's playing my aunt. You know, it's very hard not to, you know, be startled when she's hitting a car with a baseball bat. So, authentically, almost like she has practice. but she, it was great to work alongside her and then alongside Saul and, you know, another woman, Olenike, who's playing my mom. And there's so much love, there's so much care that, you know, goes into these roles, that goes into their performances, when you're around them, that it kind of rubs off on you. And, it leads up to something that turns out to be very, very opulent, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can see all of you play very well off each other and the chemistry between you all on screen is just incredible. Dunisha, I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about Faye, because she's such a wonderful character and so strong, but she's stuck in this world of toxic masculinity across the board. I was wondering if you could speak about how you envision her role within the story.
She's based on such a real character. Like this is what women from the Caribbean must become. We must become mothers, we must become sisters, we must become cousins, we must become safe spaces, especially for our male family members who often find themselves in these kind of situations. This is not a new story. It isn't new. And so for me, you know, digesting Faye, I had to be very patient with myself in trying to find her voice outside of my own voice, because my experience has been very different from her experience. I'm coming at her from a third person perspective. You know, I grew up living a very, what some people would consider privileged life, where I didn't have to interact with certain kinds of violence. But I was always an observer, an interpreter of such. And so learning more about Faye and the struggle that she was going through, having to live, as you said, in this very male-dominated space, it forced me to humble myself, to be able to communicate what it is that she was experiencing, the vulnerability that had become her, which is very different from me. yes, there are moments where, like when she says the blood clot, and I mean, I hope you aren't offended by that because it's supposed to be a curse word. But when she says blood clot, it riled up something inside of me. Like he was saying, that scene where I hit the car with the baseball bat, because it becomes so real. You're trying to save a life here. You know what happens to young men who go down this road, and you are desperate to try to find a different way. And so Faye for me brings a very, she simmers out the story a little bit, because it is so male dominated when it comes on to her, and also Akilah's mom. It brings certain things into perspective. Violence isn't just something that affects men. It leaves women in its aftershadow. And what happens to the women? How do they recover? How do they survive these moments, you know? And so Faye's character gives a little insight into that, because at the end, we don't really know what happens with her, but we know what happens with her.
Honestly, to you all, I mean this genuinely when I say it. I've seen a lot of films this week at TIFF. I've seen a lot of good films this week at TIFF. This is one of the few that I would say is truly special. And I really, really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. And I wish you all the best, because it really is just wonderful storytelling. Unintentionally timely, but also intentionally timely. And it's just a truly incredible piece. So thank you all so much for chatting with me. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you as well.
Thanks so much.